Welcome to another episode of Keeping It Real. While you listen to this podcast and think about the topics we'll explore, remember that the areas you're moving into are always most important. Always prepare for what you're about to do, and always know what's happening while you're doing it. That's how you move to protect others and yourself. Now, from headquarters, here's our host, Jason Francis.
Welcome to another episode of Keeping It Real. Who do we have with us today, Travis?
We have Beth Goulet here with us today. We're going to talk about how we determine the cost of each of our services. Beth, how long have you been here at Rail?
So I have been here for 12 years. I came to Rail as a customer service assistant in the van department, so I set appointments. From there, I moved into a CSR role. And then from there, I moved into a floating role. So basically, I covered anybody's desk that needed covering, and I did CSRs and also planning. From there, I moved into a market owner role in the van department, and then about 2 years ago, I stepped into the director of pricing role.
So how do you come up with pricing?
So there is a lot that goes into pricing. Kind of the first thing that we look at is market data. So DAT being one of the bigger sources that everybody knows, we look at contract and spot pricing. And we look at both of those because you're gonna have some brokerage usually participating in these bids and that too. So you kind of need to know where both of them are sitting and kind of try to find that sweet spot in between. We also look at historical data. So what have we hauled in the past and what did we haul that for? And then we also look at network fit. How does that fit into our network? We spend a lot of time of understanding if I'm going to deliver here, where's my driver going to go for the next load? And understanding that, knowing there's a cost in that, and putting that into the rate also. So understanding all the different pieces of what are you going to do before, what are you going to do after? So that's kind of the first thing that we look at. And then we move on to characteristics of the customers. So when we look at that, we look at what's their fuel. So every customer pays a fuel surcharge. So we have to look at that and kind of figure that out and work that in. Customers also pay different miles. So we pay our drivers from address to address. Most customers are going to pay us to cities or to zip codes.
That's city center, right? Zip code center?
Yes. Yep. So we work through that. Also, what are pay terms for the customers? So when Rail hauls a load, we have to pay the driver, pay the fuel, everything as it's happening. Most customers are on a 30-day pay term. So they don't pay us, or they don't have to pay us, I should say, for 30 days. So some customers like to go as high as 120-day pay terms. So we don't get paid for that long after we have the cost up front. So we always look at that too. Are they drop trailers or are they live loads? Obviously, there's a little bit more of a cost when you have to hit an appointment with a live load because they're never going to match up perfectly, and your driver's usually held up there longer. As far as drops, we'll look at how many drop trailers do they want, and then we also look at how many times is that trailer going to turn. So we have to figure that into if we don't get enough turns on the trailer, there's a cost to that. So we have to look at that part too. Transit requirements. So, you know, is there enough time on the loads? Is there not enough time on the loads? Is there too much? Again, that's a cost. So we have to look at those. Cargo value is another thing that we look at. So what's the value of the load? If we have to get additional insurance on it, there's a cost to that. So we spend a lot of time looking at all the different costs that go in to Rail hauling a load. And we have to make sure, in the end, that there is a margin for us.
To make a profit.
Yep. That's what we're here for.
This sounds like an absolute nightmare to me.
We got to pay all our people, and we got to get the products successfully to where they need to be, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And we can't go backwards financially doing that. We are here to make money and provide for our families. So.
Yeah, and so all my analysts are broken up into different regions across the country. So they become really, really in tune with what's going on in the market for that specific division. And so they are very in tune of, okay, this is where we're probably going to go from here, or this is where we're going to go from there, or this isn't a great network fit. So they have to go through and decipher all of that as they go through the bids too. And the bids can be as much as, you know, 5 lanes, or they can go up to 10,000 lanes.
Beth, tell us what makes rail a great value.
A lot of customers are starting to get fines from, you know, Walmarts or Targets or anything like that. So they need that service and they need it on time. And our core customers know that's what they get from us.
And reliability with us, right? We've been here 60 years, 60 plus years doing this, and we know how to do it and we do it well.
Yep. And, you know, over the last year, we've gotten quite a few requests to price things because, you know, a carrier went out of business and now the customer's left holding the bag with these lanes and loads to move. So that's definitely something that people will reach out to us, especially after that happens once or twice. They're like, I can count on rail, and they'll reach out to us right away.
And that's why the contract market is a little better, right?
Yep. So we live in that contract market. It gives us a certainty of knowing what kind of freight we're getting on a regular week. So we live in that market. You know, when after COVID, when everything skyrocketed, some carriers decided that they were going to go play in the spot market. There was a lot of money to be made there. We didn't do that. We stayed in contract. We did increase rates, but we did not run to the top of the market because we didn't want to do that to our customers. We're partners with them. So we increased, but we stayed, you know, kind of in that middle. And that's where we like to live, is kind of in that middle, not the bottom, not the top, but just kind of in that middle. And then we have our sales team go sell the value of rail.
Just to, you know, reassure a driver that happens to be out there, we do continue to use the spot market some, right?
Yes.
So, like, if you get in an area where we don't have a contract load, you can find that driver a load off of the spot market.
Correct. So we do that. And there are times that, you know, a load comes up and we have to reduce our rates. But there's a point where you need to be financially responsible. Obviously, where you're not losing money on it. But yes, so we do play in the spot market too when we hit those situations where we don't have a load for the driver. The CSRs are out there to also try to find freight. So there's multiple different ways we can go, but we try to stay more in that contract. But yeah, when something is not there, we definitely can hit that spot market too.
I don't know what questions to ask.
It would also be good to talk about.
So we can talk about a couple other characteristics that we look at when we price. One of them being, does the customer actually commit freight to us, or do they put the freight out in a waterfall process? So they take the lowest carrier first, and then they just keep moving down the line as it's rejected till somebody takes it. There's also broadcast tenders. So they shoot the tender out to all of their carriers, and whoever clicks accept first wins. So when we price, we also look at that too. You know, are we expected to take all the freight? Are they committing freight to us? Or is it going to be one of those other options? So that can also affect our price too. The last thing is also tendering patterns. So seeing, you know, do they tender every Tuesday where I know I'm going to have this load every Tuesday? Or, you know, do they tender just on the weekends when maybe in this area I need Monday, Tuesday freight because I have drivers launching? So that's also things, and I'm going to tell you most of this information we don't get when we get a bid. Typically, when we get a bid, it's where you pick up, where you're delivering. They might include who you're delivering to sometimes. And then it's usually the miles. It's very limited information. So we're just going off of these couple things, and the rest of it, it's from knowledge of the customer or working with sales to go back and interact with the customers to figure out this other information.
Yeah, which determines what we charge, because there may be additional activities that we have to do that
we're not aware of to start. And that's one thing, if we don't have this information, it can cause you to sometimes improperly price things because we didn't have all the details up front. So getting all these details is a huge part of the analyst's job, making sure they know all these things.
So what can a driver do to help us out with this?
So the big things, you know, picking up and delivering on time, giving that service, and when you can't, communicate. Communication is huge. we have plenty of customers that we can get rate increases from because our service is good. They're willing to pay for it. So those are definitely kind of the big things that drivers can do to help, is just making sure, again, if something goes wrong, we all know it's transportation. Things are going to go wrong. Just make sure you communicate as much as possible so the CSRs can do their job and communicate with the customer. The other thing is, you know, drivers living the rail values, going in and being professional and courteous at customers, that is a huge help too. We've had instances where we price something, we lose the lane, and the shippers will be like, no, we need rail back in here. Because our drivers were professional, they loved working with our drivers, they said, you know, they know what they're doing, they're educated. That is a huge help too. So, you know, being that professional driver is a huge part of it.
So no shorts and flip-flops at a food customer?
Probably not the best. I also, you know, recommend don't take your dog out at a food customer sometimes.
Yeah, I've spent a long time out on the road. I've seen some not professional drivers out there. And as a general rule, the drivers I see for rail, they're more professional in appearance and demeanor and all that kind of stuff. And that's what we're looking for. So
100%.
Stay looking sharp, right?
Yeah.
Keep the truck looking sharp.
Yep. Make sure you get your washes so it's all sparkly.
And do that safe behavior stuff.
Yep.
Do those safe behaviors so they fit in nicely wherever they go. Correct. Especially those places that really focus on safety. Yeah.
So what do you say we get to know Beth a little bit more on a non-rail level?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
I don't know what else to ask for pricing.
I'm at a loss myself. It's math, and I'm terrible at math. Beth is the perfect person for this. On her desk, she has a sign that says, yay, spreadsheets, or something to that effect.
Yeah, it basically says, this calls for a spreadsheet.
Yes.
What'd you do before trucking?
I was a shift lead at Quick Trip.
How'd you find rail?
So when I was looking, you know, trying to get a change of pace, rail is kind of the one thing in Marshfield that everybody knows. You know, they know how rail acts within the community. I grew up around trucking, so it was kind of an easy move for me. The other thing was, rail's known to be a hard interview to get into. And then, you know, if you can make it into the company, a lot of people talk about how you can move up through the ranks and everything. So for me, it was kind of a challenge at first. I'm like, all right, it's a hard interview. Let's see if we can do this.
So I understand that you have another family member that works here at Rail as well.
I do. My husband, DJ, works on our night support shift.
Right, but he was a driver before that, correct?
He was. So he was here 9 years as a local reefer driver. I think about 4 years of over the road prior to coming here also.
Sure. Very good. So what do you guys like to do on your off time when you're not at Rail?
Well, as you know, we do like to ride motorcycle. We have a permanent camper, so we spend a lot of time up there.
And I hear there's a golf cart involved in this camper.
Yep. So when we got a permanent one, I said I wanted a golf cart. That was the first thing I wanted. And of course, my husband being who he is, he could not leave it stock. So we bought it, and within that day, he started ripping it apart already. And it has a lift kit and lights and speakers, the whole nine yards.
All right. So is there anything else? I mean, we got camping and motorcycling, and it seems like that takes up a lot of time. But
it definitely does.
Are there children or?
No. We have fur babies, and that's the way it's going to be. We have an English bulldog, we have an American bully, and then we have a Great Dane.
All right, Beth, before we wrap this up, send out a message to everybody out there looking for somebody to haul their freight.
Any kind of solution you need, we can figure something out between the options that we have and the different fleets.
All right,
that's everybody. It. Thank you guys for listening to another episode of Keeping It Rail. Keep the shiny side up and a dirty side down. Be safe out there, y'all.
Thanks for being here, Beth.
Thank you.